listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 259 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where on today's episode, we're going to be talking about 10 strategies for releasing a single in 2020. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
Good. I'm back from a month away. I had my listeners know that we now have these things called sabbaticals, which doesn't mean I'm a professor, but we get... What is it? If we've worked here for 7 years, we get 4 weeks off in addition to PTO, pay time off. So that was nice. I used that. I wouldn't say it was restful, but it was necessary. I did a whole lot of homeschooling and a little bit of recording.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
here I am. You went to the beach a few times.
I did. I went to the beach 4 times. And then I went to the lake twice, but I definitely don't count the lake as the beach. I don't understand lake people. You're all wrong. The ocean is the place that everyone should prefer to go. Lake people, I'm sorry.
I kind of understand your sentiment there, but you missed a category, and that's river people.
River people too. They're also incorrect.
I live right on the Columbia River, and there's also a lake right by my house, and so I get to experience both. But I would agree the beach is superior. The problem in the Northwest is the beach is can get nice, but the water's still freezing cold, so you're not getting it.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not quite as cold as Oregon, but it's freezing. I mean, it was probably high 50s.
Oh,
but I went in, you know, it hurts for the first minute, and then you just get numb.
Yeah, well, that sounds like we could do a whole nother podcast about debating beaches versus rivers versus lakes, but we'll move on to the topics at hand for today. We're going to do a COVID check-in. It's been a while since we've talked about that specifically. And then we have our 10 strategies for releasing a single in 2020. And of course, we have some listener emails to read and talk about. But before we get to all that, I do want to mention that we do have a brand new podcast called DIY Musician Stories. And it's hosted by Monsi Cardi. She's on our team here at CD Baby. She's had a podcast for a long time where she interviews artists and authors and creative people, and it's more story driven. And so we're starting a podcast here that's all about artist stories. So the DIY Musician Podcast that we all know, you know and love, you love listening to Chris and I talk for hours on end. this podcast is about moving your career forward and marketing ideas and strategies and tips and tricks. And we do have artists on here from time to time, but it's always about something that they've done that they could help other artists understand. Like we had a couple artists on recently talking about their live streaming strategies. This new podcast, DIY Musician Stories, is more about the struggles, the creative process, the journey of being an artist. And so it will have a very different focus. So I think you'll enjoy it. And we're going to put the first couple episodes down this podcast feed. But if you like it, you'll need to go and subscribe to the direct podcast feed, which will be located wherever you listen to podcasts. But, you know, we're going to do it NPR style, which whenever they launch a new podcast, they send it down a feed of, you know, for other podcasts that they think are people will
where
enjoy.
The existing audience is.
Exactly. So check that out.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, should be good. All right. Let's have a quick COVID check-in. What are your thoughts at this point, Chris?
I mean, are you asking for my epidemiological expertise here?
Are you or anti face mask? We don't need to get into that. I don't even want to start that conversation. I think it's funny because I actually, for the very first time this week here in, I live in the state of Washington. We are in phase 2, and it's weird because different states have different phases, meaning different things, where phase 2 for Washington really is the same as phase 1 in Oregon, because they decided to start with phase 0 instead of phase 1. So right now, where I live, you can go to a restaurant, you can see up to 5 people outside your household, and whatnot. And I went to a little brewery right down the street from my house, and I hung out with, I mentioned him on the podcast a few episodes back. It's probably been like 5 or 6 episodes back, an artist called Fox and Bones. They were the ones that I mentioned them on the podcast because they started doing driveway concerts.
Right. Great idea.
The paper here gave them this gigantic front page spread. And I thought that was, you know, an interesting story and idea. And so I connected with them on the internet, and we went and got a beer the other day. And it was the first time I'd like been outside of the house with other artists in ages. And I miss it, Chris. I really miss it. We haven't had any of our conferences. We canceled Spain. We haven't attended any conferences. We canceled the DIY Musician Conference in Austin. And so I really miss being with artists and talking to artists and hanging out. And
I do too. And yet, not to be the downer, I think we're going to be in this weird back and forth between phase 0 and 1 or 2 or whatever for quite a while.
Quick question, because I just noticed right before I started recording, apparently Walmart is going to be converting 160 parking lots into drive-in movie theaters and concert venues. Are you in or out on the concerts at drive-in or drive-in concerts?
Okay, and so let me just understand the parameters. Everyone just stays in their car with the AC on, yes, and the windows up?
Yes. In fact, my friend in a band in San Diego did this, I think it was at a parking garage, and looking at the photos from stage that he took, it looked really odd and awkward.
Yes.
And so I've seen a lot of artists doing drive-in theater concerts now, where they put a stage up with a screen, and they're projecting on the screen, but also the band's playing, and that's sort of emerging as a thing.
So my answer is hell no. I'm not going to drive, sit in traffic in order to just keep sitting in my car in order to try to stare over the cars in front of me to potentially maybe see something. And if I do see anything at all, it's on a big movie screen. Like, not for me. How about you?
That was my take as well. No, I would not. Partly because of what you just said. But the thing is with music, it's like music is a social event. It's a, you want to feel the vibration of the music. If you're at a show, you want to be amongst the people. I mean, some people have, different concert attending preferences, but it definitely isn't sitting on the bumper of my car looking over other cars, because, you mentioned a good point that I didn't even think about, because I have been to a drive-in movie. I went to one last summer. There's a popular one here in town. But the screen is up high, so there's mounds where you park your car strategically, so your car's angled up so you can see and all that. But the stage isn't going to be that high, and so yeah, everything I've seen of artists doing this, it feels very awkward and uncomfortable. And I can't see them making money either, because you can't get enough cars in there. The way they're selling is by $50 per car, and you just can't get enough people in for those productions to pay for themselves.
Yeah. And you have a good point too. Like, the drive-in theaters are designed to have parking in such a way where the screen is visible, but a Walmart isn't necessarily designed for a car to see over anything. Like, you're just trying to squeeze those things in, and it's not like the parking lot's on an incline or anything like that. So I am totally not involved in that. I'm not going.
And it seems sort of like a novelty as well. So that's the thing. So drive-in concerts aren't going to save the touring business during COVID. It seems like you mentioned, this is going to be here a while. And so it's going to continue to be super important for artists to release music, to have strategies around the releases, to really harness the power of these platforms to push their music to more audiences and really get your, like we said, your digital house in order. I think it's super important to keep writing and recording and releasing. And I think independent artists have led the charge in most of this anyway. We've seen a lot of the live streaming. We did our live streaming, the truth about live streaming, and then taking your live streaming next level, and a couple artist interviews. And it seems like the whole, I got a live stream every second of the day, has slowed down some. There's been a lot of things happening in the world outside of just COVID as well that I think have change the way people are feeling. And so I think it seemed to be there was the storyline that, oh, by summer, everything's going to be good. We're all going to be good by summer. And that didn't happen. So I think people are sort of regrouping. And it, like you mentioned, I think we're going to be in this state for a while, at least where, you know, we can't tour. We can't go back into the normal pattern. So we got to plan for our releases and have strong strategies. Otherwise, we're going to lose a lot of momentum.
I agree. It's almost like you're setting up our episode.
Yeah. So let's talk about our 10 strategies for releasing a single in 2020. This came from an article we had on our blog, and we emailed it out recently, and it was hugely popular. So I think it's very timely, and we should dive right in.
Yeah. Well, before we dive in, I had two things to say. I'm not sure that they all technically meet the standard of the word strategy, but they're all super important considerations that would inform a strategy, or that, you know, that yeah, important considerations. The other thing is, when you said the thing about people really needing to kind of, well, plan more or plan differently, since releasing music is going to be kind of the focus for a lot of artists for the foreseeable future, I've gotten so many questions from friends and acquaintances and even just listeners of the podcast or whatever that I don't know on Messenger and Instagram and stuff. And like 90-something% of the questions all have to do with timing and kind of how much lead time you need for different sorts of things. And always, I would say the urgency to their question is, how should I plan? I got to get this out in a week. And I'm like, wait, you just contradicted yourself. Do you really want planning advice, or do you want to just get your music out? And then they have to think, and then they write me back, and suddenly I'm in 40 different conversations with artists who are trying to reteach themselves or rethink what it means to put out music. So anyways, all that to say, let's talk.
Actually, that's a great thing I forgot to mention, that, you know, in the COVID update, when this first happened, I talked in a past episode where it's like March, that week of March 13th, there was this dramatic spike of traffic and new art, new music submissions hitting CD Baby. And I know it was happening around the whole industry. And it was like a tsunami, like just crushing amounts of volume. And we got a little behind. The good news is we have caught up considerably. So now the inspection for albums is in a more respectable range of about a week. So that doesn't mean you stop planning for that 2-3 week or 4 week, you know, release date. That doesn't mean go back to, they can get it inspected in a couple days, so I'll just try and get it out in a couple days. No, there's you need to plan. And I've been getting that question a lot, like, how long should I take? I think a good rule of thumb is 3 to 4 weeks. And the reason being is that you're allowing time for anything to go wrong and to fix it. But you're also, when you sign up that music and it gets distributed, there could be a couple days before it shows up. Like, you know, it's not just the distribution side that got behind. Like, I noticed it took longer once Spotify received it for it to go live in their system once COVID hit, where it normally would. I've seen it show up in like less than 24 hours. I saw it taking 48 to 72. Is that the next one?
I think so. Yeah.
72 hours.
No, wait.
Yes. Yes, it is. So anyway, that allows you time for all that stuff, so you're not scrambling around, but it also allows you to change hats from the finishing up sort of project management type role of getting these files uploaded, all the information, and to switching back to strategy. And that is key, because you want to be approaching your release strategically and not just trying to get a file live, because that's what a lot of artists do and they burn a lot of opportunities. So with that said, let's hit number one on your list here, Chris.
All right. So if you go to this article, which is 10 strategies for releasing a single on the DIY.
And I'll link to it in the show notes.
There's a whole sort of preamble about the pros and cons of releasing a single versus an album or an EP. So, you know, you should consider those things, except in the case of an artist who's never put out music before. Then there's nothing to consider. You absolutely should put out a single first. And there's a few reasons for that. One is it's the easiest way to just get music onto the platform, so you can then claim your profiles on the various platforms and use their promotion tools that they offer for follow-up releases. I mean, we kind of hammer that home a lot, but that's super important. Just planting your flag, saying, I'm here. Now give me all the goodies and tools so I can, you know, make a bigger splash with my next thing. So just in terms of claiming accounts and things, that's important. But I also think releasing a single is a really important way for you, the artist, to just get in the habit of being productive and of thinking about how to release music and on a way more like low impact scale. You know, if you've completed a whole album and that's the first thing you're putting out, it's going to be a lot of stress and, you know, way more things to juggle. And if you do it wrong, you're really blowing a kind of once a year or once every 3 years type opportunity. Whereas, you know, if you boggle a single, it's a learning experience and it's, you know, you have a lot less to lose. So a couple of reasons to start with a single.
Yeah. And this isn't required, even though in our list here, it says you must release a single first. It's not required. If you have an album and you're releasing that first, it's not like you've messed up and you've ruined something. It's just with like what Chris mentioned, that there are all these, like digital pipes that you can connect and wires and things that give you tools to take advantage of each release, and they won't be connected until you have music out there in the world. So it's easier to do that with a single where, you know, you can claim your Spotify for Artist account, your Amazon for Artist account, your Apple Music for Artist account. You can get all those things claimed and get familiar with them and understand how you can use some of them for release and, you know, get your profiles tuned up, profile pics and all that, bios. So when that album drops and someone goes to your Spotify profile, it looks a lot more filled out. It looks like you've been established and things like that.
Yeah, and I think it's important to sort of best practices, I guess, from this sort of new kind of artist that's out there that is, one, a major label level artist, but also a kind of self-producing art, you know, like someone like Billie Eilish, who is, you know, creatively a little more on the DIY side, but still has this massive machine. Like she and her brother started by putting out a bunch of singles, and then, you know, then there was some EPs, and then finally, after all this hype and huge fan base had been established and people come to know her brand and stuff, then there's the album. Just as kind of accruing fans, building momentum, a single makes sense too. A whole bunch of singles make sense.
Yeah, and I like it because part of what you're learning in the early stages of your career is just how to write, how to record, and each time you do it, you get better. And it's the idea that you can get feedback, you get separated from the process sooner. So, I mean, like, meaning you get it out there and where it exists for a little bit, you've stepped away from that particular song, you're not so precious about it. And then you can kind of finally hear it objectively. Cause you know, when everyone is releasing an album, everyone says, if only people would hear this, it would be huge.
Yeah. This will get you over that notion real quick.
Yeah. And then, you know, we all have that attachment to our songs. Then you get it out there and you're like, yeah, it was good, but I'm hearing it more objectively now. I've got some ideas how I can improve. Let's keep moving. So
it's sound like a Silicon Valley cliche. It gives you the chance to fail faster.
Yes.
Or succeed faster.
Instead of spending 10 grand to fail all at once spectacularly.
Right.
All right. Let's go to number two, which is 2020 is the year of video. So the right song might just mean the right 15 seconds.
Okay. So I think not only can a song stand apart from an album, you know, that every album usually has a lead single. We live in this weird age where, you know, short form video is everywhere with TikTok and Instagram stories and whatever else, Facebook stories, Snapchat. So I think it's good to think over your catalog of songs and be like, well, what is the hook? What's the best little 15 second moment of this song that could potentially go viral or inspire someone to do something weird or fun? Or, you know, it could be a super evocative, strange lyric that people want to like create their own little scene to, or it could be a really cool beat that everyone just does a dance competition to. There's tons of different ways to spin this, but I think it's important to just think about the songs you're releasing and just try and find the hook, the visual hook, I should say, not just the audio hook.
Yeah. Well, I agree 100%. And there's an article I wrote on the DIY Musician blog about creating a video strategy, and I used Roter Video, that tool that helps you create videos. And one of my key points was we've been approaching video as if MTV still exists. Is this, I mean, it exists, but I mean, it hasn't, I don't even know what they play these days. But as if that world of VH1 and MTV that sort of created the ecosystem of music video, as if it still exists. And that's how people engage with video, meaning this 3.5 minute, the full song video, official music video, where I go and put all my artistic expression into what the visuals look like. That is fine. Nothing wrong with it. But we're in a world of short form video, and a visual hook that goes with your music may, that really, really works and helps move your music along, may look very different than that artistic expression of 3.5 minutes of an official music video. And the cool thing is you can try these different video hooks and see what results you get from different audiences. So the idea of that you create one visual for your song and that's it, it's locked and it's the official music video. Stop thinking that way. Start thinking about visual hooks that you can keep trying, especially with very key pieces of your song. If you go on TikTok, the songs that are popular, it's very clear that there is a lyric that is the people, there's a lot of times that people are doing dances to it, but there's usually a lyric that people are actually reacting to that's in that song that reinforces what they're doing in the video.
Yeah. And like you kind of mentioned in your article that you were just talking about, this too is another way where you can kind of fail faster, test a bunch of stuff. You could probably, you know, for whatever energy you'd put into making a 3.5 minute video, you could probably create 6 different 15-second videos and pull from, you know, user-generated content. You could make sure your fans know that there's a contest going on, so they're creating stuff using that hook. You could pull from archival footage and like royalty-free public domain sort of footage. You could shoot your own original things, but, you know, get way more creative, and especially if you know it only has to be 15 seconds long. So I think that's really exciting in terms of outreach and sort of viral attention you could be getting to people who don't know your music. Because there's definitely a difference between like putting out a single that's going to appeal to your existing fans who already love you. Like they'll recognize the brilliance in something that's well done if they already like you. But we all know that for something we've never heard by an artist we've never heard of, like there's got to be a little something more novelty or just immediately grabby. So just kind of think of the way that you respond to content when you first see it online. Like a lot of it just is a wash and some of it pokes out. And so this gives us more chances to find the stuff that pokes out.
Yeah. And, you know, if people are scrolling social feeds, Facebook's a good one to think about. Even if you're running Facebook ads on a video, Facebook counts a view if someone just pauses. And I think if they see 3 seconds of it, I can't remember the exact when it becomes a view in the tally.
Yeah, I think it's 3 seconds.
Most of the time when that happens, they don't have the audio on and they're just listening. They're just stopping because what's happening visually is interesting or catches their eye. So that's part of like the testing and trying different visuals for a song to get people to listen. Let's go on to number 3.
Yeah. So number 3 is basically keep releasing stuff. You got to time your singles sort of strategically between bigger releases like EPs and album LPs, because, and this is another point we make a lot, we're living in this world where you really can't disappear anymore. When you do, you know, there's a billion other artists that are going to capture your fans' attention. So you kind of have to keep putting stuff out. There's a whole sort of algorithmic logic to this as well. Like, you know, some people say every 4 weeks, some people say every 6 weeks, you know, there's some sweet spot where if you keep putting a song out every time, you just continually see growth, particularly on Spotify, where you can guarantee your followers are getting your music in their playlist. So that's another thing. Like you don't want to just, suddenly take 6 months off and see a big dip and then have to work hard and scramble again to kind of make up lost ground. So yeah. Keep putting stuff out.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there is a balance here. I've come in contact with some artists that are definitely overthinking this and like the idea of, so I have to release every song as a single and then group them all back to release as an album. No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying that you want to keep energy and momentum. And it's not just because of your fans, but these platforms, especially Spotify, when they see music being released at certain frequencies, it keeps amplifying the push to Release Radar, Discover Weekly, and the daily Discovery playlists. So those things get used more to your advantage when you're releasing more regularly. So the question I think that a lot of people ask, you know, we're out there talking to people about these kind of things, leads right into number four, which I think is a lot of the strategy just in through the creation process.
It does. Before we jump to that, I just had one more thing to say is that you might be listening and say like, oh, like people are saying I need to release something every 6 weeks. That's crazy. That's like really intimidating. But I would ask you to just reframe that a little bit, because if you put something out every 6 weeks, it's less than once a month, right? So maybe, I don't know, what does that average to? About 10 releases a year. That can include, you know, a full album. And let's say you're on a, you're making an album a year. Okay, cool. Well, then you already probably have 10 songs. So half of those single releases could be from the album, including the album launch with a lead track that you recommend to Spotify. And then the rest of it can be kind of what we're going to discuss in point number four. But I just wanted to say, like, hopefully it doesn't sound intimidating, because I bet if you, I bet you're creating more than 10 songs a year is what I'm saying. And they don't all have to be polished gems, as we'll discuss now.
Yeah. So number four is stockpile various kinds of recordings for later use, in addition to releasing traditional singles from an upcoming album. And, you know, there's a large number of different kinds of tracks you can release as singles. And the list here is long, but I'm just going to hit it really fast. The lead single, the deep dive, the deeper dive, the B-side, the bonus content, which could be a whole lot of things. We'll jump into that in a second. The collaboration, something you might do with another artist that isn't really your normal thing. The featured artist track, the building block single, the live cut, the cover song, the didn't this song already come out single? I don't know what that means.
Okay, so the building block single is kind of what the Billie Eilish method of, like, you're just putting singles out and then at some point they get compiled into an EP, and then maybe some of those end up on an album, maybe not. That's one way. But the didn't this song already come out single is like Taylor Swift puts out a huge album, and then just to kind of feed the beast and get the algorithms still playing in her favor, she puts out singles, quote singles, that are already released on the full album as kind of a ploy to, you know, continually get attention for that music. So it's an after the fact release from a larger album.
I might have to try that on our next release, because that does juice the algorithm. But the thing that it can be cool, it's sort of like the reverse of what we're saying with like singles leading up to the release, which is good, but singles after the release could be good as well. And the way you make it interesting for your fans is, you know, if you've got artwork that goes along with each song that is more special, that plays into that song. Sometimes, you know, it's hard when you're creating album art to try and come up with something visually that represents the songs as a collection. But, you know, if you're doing art for the songs individually, you might come up with some totally different concepts and you have a little bit more freedom. So that's something that can be fun as well. And, you know, you can make a t-shirt or other merch that goes along with each of those songs, so it feels less spammy.
Totally. Well, and with the didn't this song already come out single, I don't remember the exact criteria for the Spotify's direct pitching tool, the Release Radar guarantee thing. I feel like they don't want it to be a track that's, you know, associated with an ISRC that's already out there. So they might frown on that officially. But, you know, big artists are still doing it. So clearly there's some benefit to them to put out something as a single that's already been released on an album. I just think in this whole category that we're talking about, it's like there's so much freedom in this, and you know, a B-side is an outdated term, I guess, but you'd think of it as a song you're never going to put on an album. It's just this thing that exists on its own. Maybe it was an experiment. Maybe it's in a different, slightly different genre than you feel comfortable putting your official brand stamp on. Collaborations. You know, I put out a children's song at the end of May that I don't intend to ever have on an album, but it was fun to do. And I'm like, yeah, I'll put it out. Like things like that, where we can continue to grow as artists and you know, trying different hats. I think most audiences, you know, most fans of a band are happy to see that band take some fun detours, as long as, you know, as long as when the official release comes out, it's still something they resonate with.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where if you can get everybody on board, especially if you're in a band, if you can get everybody on board during the creation process, you can create a lot of variations or alternate mixes and things like that that give you more firepower during the whole release, season of release. And that's just important, because, you know, when you're in that creation process, it's so much easier than to go after the fact and try and manufacture some of this stuff. So, like, I'm going to be recording coming up soon, just thinking about, hey, what's a cover song that we can just crank out? It doesn't matter if it's on the album, but for us to have a good cover song or two that can tide us over in some downtimes. We've got it in the can. Let's use it strategically when we want. We recorded a multi-tracked show a year and a half ago, and it came out amazing. And we've just been kind of sitting on those tracks going, ah, when do we want to use this? And then COVID hit. I'm like, it's the perfect time for us to get a live album out, because there's not going to be any touring. Pretty much, at this point, it's doubtful through 2020 anyone's going to be playing shows of any significance. So a live album will probably connect more with people than in a normal time. So it's like, let's get that going. And we've got that in the works. So it's like just having these things that, you know, you can go to that well when it feels like the timing's right.
Yeah. And I don't know if was Remix even on the on this list, but Remixes is a big one too. Like, when you're recording, make sure you or your engineer bounce down some stems that you can make available on your website or whatever, so that people out there in the world know they can just grab this, you know, the tracks and do their own thing with it. And if you like it, if they send it to you and you think it's awesome, then you guys could release it as, you know, as an official release with under both of your names. And then it's another kind of promo thing to reach two audiences, but just make sure that's something you're doing or considering when you're making the record or making the song initially.
Yeah. And a lot of it just comes down to discipline, because the recording process, especially when it gets down to mixing and you're going back and forth after a couple updates and make this guitar louder, this vocal's too quiet, all that kind of stuff, people get worn down and they're like, all right, let's just wrap this up. And so
right.
It's asking for things. Well, hey, can you go make an instrumental version? And, or can you bounce down some stems? It's like, for that engineer, it's going to be extra time that you might have to pay for that you didn't account for. Or when you ask for an instrumental version, they think, you know, I've had this happen with engineers, like, well, I want to remix it so it sounds better as an instrumental. And like, no, all I really want is for you to push the mute button
right, just
on that
it.
Vocal. And like, no, but that's not going to sound bounce. I'm like, please just listen to me. Please just, I don't have access to the stuff. Just push the mute button and burn it down. It'll take you 5 minutes.
Right.
And I feel like I could have done it 10 times over in the amount of time we've gone back and forth about, all I need you to do is push the mute button. Because, you know, if you get a sync placement, that's also handy to have, because sometimes they want like the verse instrumental, but then they want it to pop in the chorus. And it's like, all I need is the vocal muted. So some of those things, I know it's challenging and it gets tedious, but, you know, it's good to make a list and then kind of check off when you know you've got the pieces you need, just so it doesn't feel like a mad scramble at the end. Let's move on.
Number five is make your music more playlist friendly. So this is not a commandment. I mean, if you don't care about that, then you shouldn't care about that. But if you are, you know, sort of adopting this mindset that playlists are a great way to get strangers listening to your music and boost your stream counts and all that stuff, then it's worth knowing what performs on average better for playlisters. And that is, you know, you got to avoid long intros and outros. You should consider putting the hook right at the beginning of the song, basically starting with the chorus. And the Beatles used to do that, so it's cool to do today too. You got to keep your songs pretty short, like under 4 minutes, I think is a definite rule for this. But I mean, even 1.5, 2.5 minute long songs are becoming kind of more the norm these days, which I find so strange. And what else? Just, you know, watch the expletives, because you're limiting the potential reach of the song for certain kinds of playlists.
Some of this is going to be genre specific. You know, if you're pitching to a jam band playlist, that's going to be different.
they want the 8 to 17 minute long songs.
Yeah, they're like, if this, don't even pitch this if it's not 8 minutes, because you're just getting warmed up at that point.
Yeah, and probably certain kinds of like hard rock or metal or like or hip hop, or like, don't pitch it unless it has expletives.
Yeah, well, and going back to our little COVID update. In the news this past week, you know, some things, artists were doing some concerts at Nashville. In Nashville, Nashville seems to be having a little turmoil lately.
Like, yeah.
On multiple levels. But anyway, there was some artists that did some packed concerts, and it was decided they've called this, they're trying to really hone in on what causes COVID to spread, and they've decided to call vocalists super spreaders, so people singing. And so I had this, the ultimate nightmare scenario is that we're all in jam bands by the end of 2020, because that's the only way we can play.
I actually, totally aside, in college, I was in a kind of jam band with no vocals. We had a microphone on stage, but it was literally just to introduce the players and the songs. And then we'd play for 12 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. And we had a Zoom reunion the other night. It was the first time we'd seen each other in, you know, more than a decade, at least probably 15 something years. And it was very special. And I thought, wow, it'd be nice to play guitar in a band that didn't have any singing right now.
Yeah. And then 4 minutes in, I'm standing there. I'm bored. If I'm bored, they're bored. Could we stop soloing, please?
No, that's just the time to pass the solo to the next person.
But going back to our playlist thing, you know, this is not a hard and fast rule that you have to do for every song. These are just some things I think that help if you are doing a single version or doing some variations of a song, like, you know, we did an EP, but it was all the same song. It was four different versions of the same song. Fortunately, that song, the vocal comes in. There's four bars where the drums and bass are in. And I had thought about for a playlist chopping that off, but I didn't. But we did different variations. One that was acoustic, one that where the vocal comes in right at the top for that one. We did a rock version. We did a totally different, like, remix type dream pop thing. And the idea was, you know, they might find different audiences through playlists, and it's different opportunities to pitch plays. So it can just be used as strategically to think about what song has the most potential. Well, not one with a gigantic intro or thing where it takes a while to get into what the song is. I've been listening to a lot of Pink Floyd lately, and if they weren't Pink Floyd, there's a lot of stuff on there that if you're not wanting to, if you're like, who's this new band? Sometimes it's like 3 minutes before the song even really seems to start. And there's like background noise and stuff like that. So that's the kind of stuff you want to avoid as a new artist if you're trying to get placed on a playlist. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it for an album version, but I also would say if you do like have a shortened intro and release that first as the single, like, you know, we used to do this all the time for radio edits when releasing to radio, that will be a different master recording than what's on the album. So you'll need to use different ISRC codes. So you won't have that, you know, that play count bump when the album version comes out.
Number six is choose the right distributor, which of course is just our chance to say it's CD Baby, duh. But for real though, I think some of the stuff that's in the preamble of the article were kind of basing our discussion on now talks about how press opportunities might be harder for a single than with an album, because an album gives you a greater context, you know, more of story to tell potentially. But maybe with that one exception, with press being different, I think a single can have just as much of a career impact as an album. Like, there's sync licensing opportunities. There's a chance for the hook of your single to go crazy on TikTok. There is, you know, playlisting opportunity. It's just, there's all this opportunity and so many different ways to make money and to find an audience that you shouldn't think of singles as like, oh, this is the quick shit to throw out and any old distributor will do and just get it up online. I don't care. You really want to do the release justice, even when it's just a single song, because there's a right and a wrong way to distribute music. And, you know, with CD Baby, we kind of lead you through all those steps. We make sure you're monetized in all the different ways, and we don't like nickel and dime you for it. It's all included as part of the package. We're verifying your metadata, like all the sort of the precautions we take on your behalf are really important to make sure your music stays available. So I would caution you not to fall into the mindset of, oh, this is just a single song, I'm just going to get it out. However, treat it as seriously as you would, or, you know, maybe almost as seriously as you would a full release, and expect that it could go places if you put in the work. And when it does, you want to be, you want to have all your bases covered.
Yeah. Very important. And we do have a sister company called Sounddrop. If you're doing mostly covers, we have a lot of YouTube artists that use that brand, and a lot of people that do video game covers, which is a whole different world and has its own different complications with licensing songs. But they're experts over there at all of that. And so if you're doing a lot of like cover songs and you're a YouTuber, that I would highly recommend checking out Sounddrop as well, because they are geared for that kind of release pattern. Let's move on to number 7. Create a Spotify pre-save.
Yes. There is absolutely no point in telling anyone you have new music coming if they can't do anything about it. And I think for a long time, particularly, I don't know, when did Facebook kind of really take off beyond the college market? Like 2006 or 7 or something like that? Anyways,
yeah, it was right around there, yeah.
Back in those days and sort of the dawn of Twitter, there was this really bad habit that we had as musicians of being like, got a new album coming next month. Woohoo! And like, yeah. All right, cool.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah. So a pre-save is just one of, you know, a lot of different things you could be doing to actually get some value and give some value for that announcement. But basically, Spotify pre-save lets someone save the song in advance of its release so that on the day it comes out, it's right there in their song queue. They're way more likely to actually hear it. So CD Baby gives you a free way to do a pre-save through our marketing tools called show.co. So you should check that out. It does take a little planning. You've got to get us the music in time to get it to Spotify in time that they can, spit back the URI. There's sort of procedural things you got to do. So get it set up in advance and then set the pre-save up so that you have a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks to share it with your audience and say, hey, new song is coming, but if you want to hear it now on SoundCloud or an unlisted YouTube video or something, just pre-save it on Spotify. And, so you're offering some benefit for them to take that action.
Or we'll be giving away t-shirts or hats or whatever. The thing I like about how show.co works, because there's some other tools that will do pre-saves out there, but there is zero reason for your fans to pre-save anything just for the sake of pre-saving. There is no shortage of streams available on the day your music comes out. Meaning a lot of our idea of pre-saving and the way people approach it is still based on the scarcity of, oh, if I don't pre-save this, they might run out of copies at the store. They're not going to run out of copies. So your fans aren't concerned about that. That used to be the main concern. It's like, hey, if you don't pre-save now, you may not get in on this first shipment. That's not an issue. So you got to stop thinking like that. The thing I like about show.co is it gives you the opportunity to incentivize your fans to do something, to take this action that helps you, because pre-saving is all about you. It does nothing special for them. So when they take that extra time to do it, you can incentivize them with something like access to files that they haven't heard, like pre-save this and hear our unreleased single or a live track, or you'll be entered to win t-shirts or get access to something, or, you know, you'll just hear the album now, and you can do all sorts of things to make that happen. But that's why I like it. And just, you know, creating a landing page and telling people to pre-save your music, if you've got diehard fans, they might do it, but otherwise there's no reason for them to do it. So yeah, incentivize them.
So one last thing I'd say about pre-saves is, you know, I guess it's debatable, but in a lot of ways, an actual Spotify follow is kind of more important or maybe more valuable than a pre-save, because a pre-save is about one particular song. But if you get a follower and then you go through the whole, you know, direct pitching process. You can hit that one person time and time again every single time you put out new music. So all of what we just talked about with Show.co pre-save campaigns is applicable to a kind of campaign called follow campaign, which is just you're offering something cool to incentivize that someone just follow you on Spotify. And I think that's a kind of campaign, even if you don't have upcoming music, you know, you can run it between releases as long as the reward is cool enough. So kind of always keep that in the back of your mind as something you can be doing.
And that leads into number 8, which is get your guaranteed release radar playlist placements. And that's why those follows are important.
Yes. I feel like we don't even need to talk about this when we talk about it so much.
Yeah. I mean, the short of it is that when those people follow you, Spotify changed it. It hasn't been that long. So some artists may not have experienced this yet with their releases, but it used to be that when you release something and use their pitching tool, Spotify would push it to some of your fans' release radar and kind of gauge a temperature and then maybe push it even further. Well, now they guarantee your release will get pushed to all your followers' release radar. And so that's where some of this energy from the platform comes from. So that's why that follow ultimately can be more beneficial than just a pre-save, because a pre-save, they may or may not listen, but the follow, chances are they're more of an active user on Spotify, but also that release radar, it will be in their release radar.
Well, and for this whole process, there's a very kind of strict timeline you got to keep to. You won't be eligible to go through this process unless you have at least 7 business days, I believe, ahead of the release date to go through Spotify for Artists. And so just that's another thing with where planning is really important. Make sure you get the music to CD Baby so that we can get it to Spotify well in advance. And then the process is also important kind of beyond guaranteeing your followers hear your music. You also get to feed Spotify a bunch more metadata about your music, including instrumentation and additional kind of genre keywords and stuff like that. So that's something you should definitely do, because all of that stuff could lead to your music being placed in some genre or instrument or country specific playlist that you might not have otherwise gotten that attention. So make sure you do that for every time you put out a new release.
Yeah. And to be clear, the 7 days is from when it shows up in Spotify system. So it's not, I went to CD Baby 7 days before my release date and started the process. It's, you know, Spotify has to have it 7 days in advance, but you should give it more time, because the thing is, it's like, that's 7 days. They've already got an editorial calendar running. You know, the chances of getting on an editorial playlist from their pitching tool is very low, but you're going to expand your chances if you've got more time. If there's 2 weeks and they know it's coming and they can slot you in, it's going to be different than if they have 7 days notice. All right. Number 9 is promote your single ahead of time and after it's released.
Yeah, this one could be its own episode probably, but yeah. You want advance planning so that you can kind of get all different sorts of attention for your music. And that could mean song premieres and video premieres on blogs. I know those are getting rarer and harder to come by, but can still have an impact, particularly because Spotify and other streaming platforms algorithms are informed not just by what's happening on their platforms, but what happens off the platform. And so if Spotify's system notices that your music is getting talked about on various industry, you know, music blogs and stuff like that, it matters, and it kind of pings their system in some super complicated way I don't understand to take note of your music. So lining up that sort of stuff can have an impact, you know, like we said, with pre-saves, getting your distribution set up in time. Yeah, just giving yourself time to create the cover artwork and then to do various things with the cover artwork, which, you know, in the past we've talked about how I've break up the cover into 9 different tiles and you share it over an Instagram. I think people are kind of sick of that, so I don't know if I'll do that again, but it's a thing, and you know, there are other ways of having slow reveals of aspects of the release, whether it's the cover artwork or the lyrics or, yeah, and all that takes planning and knowing what the hook is. Like, you gotta not just the hook of the music, but the hook of the story about your music.
Yeah. And to highlight the you know, keep promoting after it's released, it's, I think artists tend to do some promotion right before it comes out. It's been a long journey. It's out. And it's kind of this moment of, well, now what? And I think that's where it's so useful to have all that follow-on material with like things like video and lyric videos and just the lyrics or chord charts and other ways that people can keep engaging with that particular song that gives you things to talk about it. A video of like talking about the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. So it's good to just keep finding interesting ways to get your fans in front of a particular song.
Yeah, well, that was sort of one sub point I made in that section of the article. Find different ways to repeat the message. So you might think it's just a single. I've already announced it. Maybe I've reminded people a few times. What more can I do? I'm done. But, you know, not only are there hints and teases you can make, you can tell the story of the song. You can tell the story of how it was recorded. You could tell the story of what you're afraid about when people hear it. You could share an image. You could share 20 images. You can make videos. You can, like, there's just so many. And then there's just the sort of direct appeal to your fans. Hey, the song's out. It would really mean a lot to me if you listen and tell me what you think. And just, you know, like, constantly be thinking of new ways to get back to the message that the song is available, because, you know, this is something you and I have been talking about just in marketing in general. Like, people respond to different kinds of things. One person might really need that casual Instagram photo to care about your music. Another person might need the chord chart. Another person might need a 10-minute YouTube video. Like, there's just no way of covering all the grounds with just one message. So find different ways to repeat it.
And number 10 you have here is use singles in conjunction with an album release. And at first, when you read that headline, it might be, isn't that what we're talking about? But no, there's some other ways where in the album package that you can use a song to drive attention around an album release.
Yes, indeed. So there's the pre-ad on Apple Music. In the download world with iTunes and Amazon, there's the, what do they call it? The instant gratification track that comes when someone it's called a pre-sale, right? The spacing, what it's called. But when someone pre-purchases the download of the album before it's released, they get one track immediately, and then they get the full album on the day of its release. So you could be thinking about that. You could also, you know, release a new song on a compilation, which is technically still just a single song, but you're finding other good company to keep for that song, you know, and then it's living amongst, then it's living amongst some other artists and other songs. But that reminded me of a very obvious thing to do with singles, which is to make your own playlist and contextualize that song amongst a bunch of other songs, or make a playlist that refers to music that influenced that song.
Yeah. And the thing with the Apple pre-ad that you mentioned, it works very different than a Spotify pre-save. So it's very different than how you might access that as a fan and all that. So it shows up differently for everyone. There are some tools that allow them to pre-add it, but it's different. So it sort of sits in context of the album, like you said, because there's different requirements for it to be an option that's available to you.
Right. And if you have questions about like whether you will qualify to do a pre-ad, go to CD Baby's Help Center. We've got all the guidelines there.
And I think that brings us to the end, Chris, of our 10 strategies for releasing a single in 2020.
You know, it's interesting. We didn't talk about one thing that I really want to talk to you about, but maybe this is its own episode as well. But our stories ad experiments lately, you know, social advertising basically as a way of drawing attention to a single.
Yeah. You know what? We do need to do another episode about that, because I was talking to an artist this week and what they were doing sounded almost identical to what I was doing, but they were getting much better results. And so I wanted to look into their Facebook account. They had someone helping them run them. So I wanted to look in and be like, what are the exact settings that you have in order to get that? But that's, yeah, we need to do another follow-up.
Yeah, I for those who are just listening to us riff on this, Kevin and I ran a very similar kind of ad strategy to test. Neither of us had very good results, which left me confused more because I've run the same exact song. I used the video for that as a video ad on Facebook a year ago and had amazing results. So I'm fairly confident it's not about the quality of the song. Like, because part of me was like, well, maybe just my song sucks and maybe the video is terrible and maybe I should quit.
Chris, it's not your song. Trust me.
Then I did hear, you know, the Creative Juice folks, Corinne on the last episode was talking about some changes she's noticed in Instagram stories results. So then I felt a little less bad, but maybe we just targeted the wrong countries. I don't know.
Well, also, there's a lot going on in the world, Chris. You might have noticed. The funny thing is, when I started running those, our overall Spotify streams for Small Town Puts seemed to be directly impacted by people's attention being elsewhere. So I've sort of timed them at the worst possible time. It was just a coincidence. You know, I was going through this program and, you know, just kind of in my own little world, set them up and had them ready to go. And then the world is doing its thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The exact same thing happened to me. I started this ad campaign and my numbers started going down. I'm like, wait a minute. What the hell?
Yeah. I guess that's how it works these days. all right. Well, if you have some strategies or anything you'd like to share, questions you'd like to ask, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we have two emails for today. Let's get into it. Here's the first one. Hi, guys. Longtime listener, first time contacting. Let you know I really enjoy your work and appreciate the varied topics. Lately, the sessions on live streaming have been excellent. I've been playing Facebook Live at 6:30 in the morning Eastern Time, solo piano, every morning, unless I screw up, and only show my hands on the keys. I figured at that time of day, getting on time is enough. Streaming on time is enough of a trick without worrying about what to wear. That's why he's just showing his hands. I started this as an experiment to see if Facebook actually feeds to a wider audience than if I simply post videos, which you recommended. It works. I think my audience automatically doubled going live. Now, after 3 months, there's a community that says hello to one another, and we all start the day together. I change up and experiment camera angles and definitely change the styles of tunes. Monday, loud and rocking. Sunday is reflective. It's been over 3 months, and I'll keep doing this as long as I enjoy it, as well as my morning buddies. I've performed for free thus far during COVID, though we'll soon link to a tip jar. Listening to your guests talk about tipping makes sense to go ahead and allow people to give back to you. Also, I've played before Zoom casts of others as guest sign-on. This is pretty cool, yet hearing in the recent episode that Zoom settings should be adjusted for music performance makes a lot of sense. Just really saying thanks for the info. If any of your guests are nervous about live, it's worth the butterflies. Jump in, enjoy it. Have some great sessions and not so great sessions. People really appreciate the effort. Regards and rock on, Joe Probes. Thanks, Joe. I thought that was interesting feedback because I did like the idea of, we've said so many times that live streaming is not a concert. If you're approaching it like a concert, chances are there's some missed opportunities or some things you're missing out on the leveraging the power of the idea of just going live. And I say that in reference to, if I'm thinking about a concert and approaching like a concert, I never would be saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this thing at 6:30 in the morning. But because he's doing like piano, solo piano, it's just his hands. It's kind of like this becomes this morning thing that people enjoy. And I liked that idea. It's like, oh, here's some live solo piano interaction to get my day going.
Come have some coffee with me.
Yeah. And so I thought that was a great example of how it's different. And he's doing it every day, but I think the way he's approaching it makes sense. And it's definitely grown his audience and people have enjoyed it. And yes, Joe, you should definitely ask people to throw in on that tip jar because you've been doing it for 3 months. Give him a chance to show some appreciation. But that's cool. And, you know, like he said, you just got to jump in. you're going to have some great sessions and not so great sessions. That I think the thing that once you go live and realize that, you know, sometimes you're just going to fall apart. I think sometimes people appreciate that. Well, they appreciate it because it does feel real. It's when you're not in the same room with people and you're just watching stuff online, it's like, you know, how do I know that this is actually live? Because, you know, a lot of things that we have watched over the years under the assumption of live, like if you've attended webinars and things like that, a lot of them aren't really live. They fake the interaction. And so you think it's live and it's pre-recorded. Some of those things just make it feel more real and human and like talking to the people that are there and things like that.
I'm laughing because it's not exactly what you're talking about, but this singer-songwriter I like a lot named Mark Arelli, on Tuesdays he's been going live on Instagram and just sort of doing these interviews. And this week he did one with his son, who's like 9, I think. And the gist of the show is like people would ask the son questions. And someone said, like, hey, what's it like having a musician for a dad? And there were a lot of moments in this interview where I was like, ooh, if these two people were, or if the artist was more insecure, this would sound pretty rough, like in the kids say the darndest things kind of way. Because his son was like, oh, whatever. I kind of wish my dad had a job where he made more money. And so the artist, Mark Arelli, was like, well, yeah, but like, I'm like a folk singer. Like, what do you expect? And the kid's like, yeah, but you could get a different job. Like, you could be an astronaut. Oh, that's amazing. So I think everyone appreciated that. Like, even that is not awkward so much as just one of those totally unscripted moments you could never plan for, because you never would plan for that.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Yes. And those of you with kids know that, when you're a musician, they don't think you're as cool as you thought they would think you were.
Right.
I've had to tell them, don't you realize how cool it is? Your dad's playing in a rock band and making records.
I like your story about your older daughter, not like really not giving a damn at all about anything you ever do until you took her to, where was it? The NAMM show or something. And there was a bunch of people waiting in line to see your talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also, then when they found out I actually had a podcast, like, wait a minute, you do podcasts? I'm like, oh, so that's the new cool thing. So that's when they decide, okay, my dad does a podcast. That's cool.
He's done one cool thing in his life.
All right, let's move on to the last email. Greetings, Kevin and Chris. I've been binge listening to your podcast. You've given me plenty of homework. Now is a good time for homework. I just updated 4 legacy releases from 2003 to 2008 from Standard to CD Baby Pro. 2 questions. I've been getting heaps of letters from Music Reports for the last few years with licensing requests. Will upgrading to CD Baby Pro mean that I will automatically grant licenses for some or all of these companies requesting licenses? So the short answer and the quick answer for question 1 is yes, the ones that are legit, we will handle that. You don't have to worry about that anymore. So all the opportunities that are good, we will handle those licenses and you won't have to worry about it. So question number 2, do you have any advice for promoting legacy releases? I have 3 albums from Baskervilles and 1 album from Auto Party. I'm assuming those are 2 different artist names, along with a new project called The Estate Owns the Ghost. The Estate Owns the Ghost Show. With an upcoming release. My priority is my new project. I don't want to ignore my old catalog from my old bands, but I am not quite certain what to do with it either. A tiny amount of income still trickles in from those old releases. Again, thank you for the heaps of useful homework, Rob.
I'm not sure with the second part of the question, what is being asked exactly? Like, I don't...
How should he approach legacy releases? They're old. We've been trained by the traditional music business that old music is unworthy, second-class citizens should just go away. But then you move into the digital world where it sits on the shelf infinitely. Any music could be new, amazing, exciting music to someone at any time. So to me, part of it is just changing that mindset that legacy means bad or outdated or crusty. Because, you know, when... the height of the music business in the 90s, and this is when, you know, we were on a label, you as an artist, and this is one of those things you don't think about now, but back then, part of the stress of a release was if you didn't sell enough that first 2 weeks, all the stores would start removing the copies. And then there might be a copy or two laying around. So now really it's a supply issue because people can't even get your music if they want it. And if you don't sell enough, eventually those copies will go away. And if you don't release anything new, people won't be able to find it in stores. So we got trained that old music needs to go. But I think that in the new world we live in, I think, yes, you can constantly be trying to use tools to pitch various tracks to playlists, or there's lots of things you can do to reinvigorate that. I think you can make some video's a great one. If you've got tracks that don't have video, adding some, like using that tool, Rotor Videos is a great one. For $25, you can have a video for it. But using some tools like that to add visuals, new elements to old songs, I think is a great idea to sort of keep those songs fresh, or chord charts, all those things we talked about. But yes, there is a different strategy because it's not, you can't go new. This is my latest release. Here's where I am as an artist. But I think you can also go back and talk about those places you've been and reference them in compared to what you're doing now and how you've grown and or where you're at that time. There's lots you can do.
Yeah. And if you make a kind of discography playlist and featured on Spotify, it's like, that's probably not going to move the needle a ton, but it's totally worth doing to, you know, pin it to the top of your thing. And maybe if your new band or your new artist name is most important, then start with that stuff, but make sure your other stuff, if you're still proud of it, is represented there. So people that hear the new stuff are like, oh, cool, there's all these other projects this person was involved in. And then they just go and listen through to it all.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's like there's these platforms, there's, you know, things like SubmitHub, you can use that and try and find some other playlist for it, or I don't know. But the ultimate question, should you be trying to market these? Absolutely. I think as an artist, you should be thinking about your entire catalog all the time because it is a complete body of work. And artists that I see, especially independent artists that I see really making a living from their music, are people that have larger catalogs and they've learned how to make their entire catalog have value. If it's just your latest release and nothing, and then you move on, then I think you're missing out on a lot of, you know, when someone likes one track, it leads to another and another and another. Now you've got hundreds of tracks and now there's lots of people listening from all these different angles. So that's the important thing. All right. Well, again, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Let us know how you're doing during COVID. If you've adjusted strategies that are working, if there's something that you want to share with artists, if you're trying ads for the first time, you know, live streaming, if you've played a drive-in movie theater concert, we need to hear from you. You know, I mentioned my friend posted some photos from the stage and he mentioned something about it being awkward or something. And I looked at him like, oh man, that's exactly what I thought when somebody, mentioned that, cause there's several artists that I know that have been doing, some drive-in movie theater shows. The first thing I thought of was just, that's gotta be awkward. And if, you know, On the one hand, I thought, well, you know, you could just go to a parking lot and set up and play for the empty cars and feel the same the same amount of like accomplishment. Or you could fake it. You could just set up a stage and say, drive-in movie theater show, man, it's packed. Just be a parking lot where I don't know. It's just weird playing to a bunch of cars and I guess after every song people tend to honk and things like that. And it's just weird.
Well, you did say you've been listening to Pink Floyd a lot lately. Have you ever watched Pink Floyd's Live at Pompeii?
No, I have not.
Concert film. So I think it was in like, I don't know, 71 or 72. It was when they were making Dark Side of the Moon. So they hadn't released that huge career changing album yet, but they set up in the Colosseum at Pompeii. And there's no one there. I mean, it's this ancient like lava field and they played to no one. The idea was they were playing to the ghosts of the volcano, but this Walmart thing playing to no one reminded me of that. We have so many opportunities during COVID to play to no one.
Hey, I have experience playing in the men's section at Walmart to no one. So at least the parking lot to cars would feel a little bit more like an upgrade. You know, speaking of Pink Floyd, this is my random thought to end the podcast. Dark Side of the Moon is like this breakthrough album that they're known for. And, you know, I've known about, you know, I've known that album for many, many years. And then there's a couple other albums that people really know them for. But the interesting thing to me is that Dark Side of the Moon is their seventh studio album. And
oh yeah,
there's I was originally thinking that like The Wall and all those came before Dark Side of the Moon, which they did not. And so it's been interesting. I was going through their previous albums just to hear they all sound very similar. There's some growth happening, but then there's just this monster leap in quality, in songwriting and artistry. And it's just those kind of things fascinate me, that what happened from here to here, that they had these six albums that really sounded similar. You know, it sounds like Pink Floyd some, you know, it sounds like the 60s, early 70s band, but then Dark Side of the Moon hits and the world has changed.
Oh yeah. That was like one of my favorite bands in high school. So I could talk all day about them, but you know, did you know for their first like album and a half, they had a completely different primary singer, songwriter, band leader?
I was wondering about that because they sounded different.
Yeah, this guy named Syd Barrett was like their, kind of their leader. And he had a way more like Wind in the Willows, British, psychedelic.
Yeah, and because they have that sound, yeah.
And then at once he left the band, then sort of all of them were writing and kind of finding their voice. And so they go through this few album period of like, I mean, it's still all cool. I like it all, but you can tell they're not mature yet, or yeah. They're not, maybe not mature. They're not fully realized. And then I think the album right before Dark Side of the Moon, it's called Metal, is like when to me, they finally sound like the band that everyone loves like the most. You should check that album out if you haven't.
Yeah. And I bring that up just because I find it encouraging when, you know, we're talking about releasing music and recording and progressing. It's like, just to hear that with this band that became such a monster success, that the people that love their stuff that they're known for would probably not like their first album.
And, right.
And the idea that there was so much work, so much more music than a lot of artists ever release before they even became big.
Right.
And yeah. So it's one of those things that just, I find encouraging and interesting to hear the progression of creativity as an artist develops. And to me, it's just very encouraging to go, you know what? You got to keep working and keep moving forward and keep getting better, because the thing I love about music is success can happen at any time. And there's this mystery to it. If we could figure it out without that mystery, we'd all be doing it, but we'd all be at the top. But it's that mysterious thing that connects with people, that you just got to keep writing and recording, releasing, and the magic eventually happens. But anyway, I thought that was really fun. I've been jogging in there's a cemetery a block from my house, and I've been jogging in the cemetery to, you know, socially distance myself. No one there is going to get COVID from from me. And so I've been taking time to listen to albums like that. The other thing that I found fascinating is, if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you know I'm a big fan of Guns N' Roses. But after listening to a bunch of Pink Floyd over and over again, realizing how much of an influence Pink Floyd was on Guns N' Roses, it's very clear to me.
I think of that every time I listen to Estranged from, that was on Use Your Illusion 2, right?
Yep.
So the guitar solos on that are so much like the guitar solos on Pink Floyd's Animals album. I don't know if you've listened to Animals, but
I was the other day.
Yeah, so those guitar solos are amazing.
Yeah, they are good. And so that was just another interesting thing. And a lot of the influence that I heard is stuff that Guns N' Roses only does live, like some of the in-between stuff or added stuff they do on live tracks. But anyway, there's your...
There's 10 minutes of random
random musical thought at the end. Keep listening to music. Keep diving in. It's interesting to hear other artists' stories that you know, influences and how their success grew. And go check out the DIY Musician Stories podcast.
See you next time.
Yeah. I'll catch you later.
Peace.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.